You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a reporter covering Brazil's Olympics tells us that the international media is focusing too much on the negatives of life in Brazil. First, we're only a couple weeks out from a new school year, which is the 40th anniversary of the court-ordered desegregation of Milwaukee public schools. In 1976, a federal judge ruled that Milwaukee schools were illegally segregated and ordered the school board to immediately take steps to integrate schools. The board appealed the decision, went to the U.S. Supreme Court, which ordered a new trial. The case was finally settled. In 1979, the school board agreed to implement a five-year desegregation plan. Alan Borsig says the problems haven't gone away and are actually, in some ways, worse now. He's with us to talk about the desegregation anniversary. He's a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School. He writes a weekly column from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on education. Alan, welcome back to Central Time.
Pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's go back to the late 1970s. Ultimately, this ruling does go through saying Milwaukee schools have to be desegregated. What was the plan that they came up with? What did they try to end segregation in the schools?
Well, the busing did start in September of 76, and it was phased in over the next few years. And it was a plan that was heavily dependent on two things. One was busing, and one was creating a set of schools, magnet schools, specialty schools. The term magnet was mostly used at that time. That would be so attractive that white parents and white kids would be willing to go to them, even if they were in African-American sections of the city or schools that had previously had low achievement levels. And so it transformed the landscape, ultimately.
And you write that one of the reasons that desegregation had trouble was that a lot of the white families left the city itself, went out into suburban areas. Was that a reaction in part to the desegregation order?
Well, there are probably a lot of factors involved, but there's no question that schools were a big part of it and desegregation was a big part of it. In the subsequent years from, say, 1975 to 1990, I've seen the number. It's enormous. It's like 250 to 300,000 white people moved out of the city and moved into the suburbs. The black population of Milwaukee was increasing rapidly at that time, and we were just in the early stages of what's become a huge demographic change for Milwaukee, which is the rise of the Hispanic community. But the whites basically, and I'm being a little blunter here than maybe I should be, but the whites basically didn't stick around. A few schools, yes. A few neighborhoods, yes. But overall, in 1976, Milwaukee Public Schools, two-thirds of the students were white. Within a few years, that went below 50%, and these days it's more like 10 to 12%.
Paint a picture now of Milwaukee when it comes to segregation in the schools. What do things look like?
That's such an interesting question because so little has actually changed. There was a period in the late 70s into the early 80s, where a lot of the schools actually had quota systems, how many white kids, how many black kids. Even some of the best schools in town had waiting lists if you were black, and you could get in easily if you were white. And then that whole desegregation, integration era pretty much faded away. I think that's true nationwide. There's almost no impulse to do that, not from anywhere, not from the higher income, lower income communities in Milwaukee, white, black, Latino. So the large number of, the largest number by far of schools in Milwaukee, whether they're private, whether they're independent charters, or whether they're in the Milwaukee public school system, have overwhelming makeup, student body makeup of one race, be it white, black, Hispanic, or in a couple cases, Hmong. There's a high school in the northwest side, a K-12 school on the northwest side of Milwaukee that has 1,200 students, of whom almost every one of them is Hmong. So it's a very interesting picture. And nobody complains about it. Nobody agitates about it. Legally, it's a whole different era as well. But segregation is just a plain fact of life in schools in Milwaukee, with some exceptions.
Right. I wanted to say, in many of these schools, it sounds like I could walk in and say, ah, this is a black school, or this is a white school, or this is a Latino or Hmong school. You write that there are a few exceptions. What are those?
Well, a couple of the charter schools, a couple of the specialty schools with an MPS that do attract a more diverse population. There's a charter, an independent charter school, very excellent school called Woodlands, that intentionally has positioned itself in one of the few neighborhoods in Milwaukee where you can expect to draw a mixed population, and they consider that a goal and a point of pride for them. But there aren't many. At the high school level, it's a little bit more because the high schools draw from such wide areas. At the kindergarten through eighth grade level, very few schools that are racially mixed.
Talking to Alan Borsuk, he writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School. 40th anniversary this school year of court-ordered desegregation in Milwaukee. As we're hearing, the schools still look pretty segregated. And Alan, I wanted to ask about the quality of the education before, you know, the 60s, the Jim Crow era, where the idea was separate but equal, the argument anyway, that, yeah, white people, black people go to different schools, but they're equal schools. Clearly they weren't. Lower quality facilities in every single way imaginable for the most part. How about now? I mean, is a kid at what we could probably call a black school getting the same quality of education as the kids at the white school?
By race, I don't think it's as clear cut. By income, it is. Schools in low-income communities, for whatever reasons, and some of it isn't simply dollars, but they just don't have the resources, the capacities, the facilities that schools in higher-income communities do. And I'm talking about the suburbs as well. A lot of the school buildings in the city of Milwaukee are in good condition but very old. Class sizes are much larger than in a lot of the suburban communities, among other problems. And simply, you know, if you put me in front of a door of a school and I walked into it, I bet I could tell you pretty quickly whether I was in the suburbs or the city, and the difference would be the suburban schools are much nicer.
Now, you wrote about something that I hadn't heard much about before, people looking at the idea of desegregating not by race, but by income level or socioeconomic status. As you were just saying, there are low-income schools, higher-income schools. Is this a conversation that's happening in Milwaukee?
No. I wish it were, frankly. No, there's really, it would probably involve more integration between the city and the suburbs, and there's very little interest in doing that as a policy thing, as a matter of carrying out the state's open enrollment law. It goes on all the time, but that's on an individual basis, and it actually doesn't serve to integrate schools either by race or by income. But as a policy discussion, nobody's interested in here. But there are places in the country where it's a hot subject. Some of it is as simple as redrawing school district boundaries or the boundaries for individual schools, so you have much more of a mix of white kids and low-income kids and higher-income kids. The first project in the country like this goes back to, I believe it's 1979, and was in La Crosse. It involved the two high schools in La Crosse, one of which was definitely more high-income and academically more ambitious. And they just sort of redrew the boundaries and the application processes so that the populations on either side of the river, I believe it is, that separated them in La Crosse. And that's kind of faded out, but it was a pretty noble effort, and it did have impact. So you're seeing that pop up now in a lot of cities in the country where there are efforts to create more diverse student bodies. There's research that shows pretty persuasively that low-income kids benefit from being in a economically mixed atmosphere, and that there's no penalty to higher-income kids. It isn't like there's a downside. And it's actually much cheaper, according to some researchers, than an actual busing program or some other things, which are quite expensive. So the appeal of economic integration is pretty high. It's also legal, which race-based plans are generally not being approved by courts anymore.
Now, Milwaukee, we said this court order back in 1976, these efforts coming some years, starting then and going some years after. Was Milwaukee behind the curve on desegregation when we had this wave of efforts to desegregate schools?
Well, it was probably in kind of the middle of the pack. That was a time when court-ordered desegregation was going on all across the country. In some places, such as Boston, Louisville, it was far more tumultuous, disruptive, even violent. Milwaukee never had that kind of violence attached to a court-ordered desegregation into busing. It was actually implemented quite peacefully, one of the reasons being that generally white kids were given a lot more latitude to choose, and black kids were the ones who were pretty much ordered onto buses. So the opposition from the white community, like you had in Southie in Boston, didn't occur here. But a lot of people in the black community eventually came to resent this very much, that it was what became known as white benefit. The whole plan was geared to white benefit. Politicians like the late Polly Williams was just on the rise that point. She served in the legislature for many years. She felt very strongly that it was just wrong that black kids had to go to white schools, so to speak, to get a decent education, and that the black community needed to demand high-quality schools in its own midst. And that struck a chord with a lot of people.
We're talking to education expert Alan Borsak now about the 40th anniversary of the court-ordered desegregation of Milwaukee public schools. What changed since then and what hasn't? We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Do you remember the desegregation efforts in Milwaukee's public schools 40 years ago, up to 35 years ago or so? How did it affect you? How diverse is your local school today? What do you think about the school where your kids or grandchildren go? What needs to change, if anything, to help diversify Milwaukee public schools or your schools wherever you are? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you in just a few moments here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up on our discussion now with education expert Alan Borsak about the 40th anniversary of the court-ordered desegregation of Milwaukee public schools. You can join us at 800-642-1234. How diverse was the school you went to, your kids go to? Do you remember the desegregation efforts in Milwaukee 40 years ago? What did you think at the time? What do you think looking back? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to a caller now. We've got Mike on the line in Milwaukee. Mike, hi.
Good afternoon. I worked at the Villard Avenue School at that time. And Dr. Stucker, who was in the sociology department at UWM, was my professor. I took statistics from him. And he and Judge Reynolds were the ones that were instrumental in getting that thing done. And then right after it got done, Dr. Stucker made sure that he moved out of here. You know, he was worried. But I worked at Villard Avenue School, and I watched that school go from a well-disciplined, well-organized school with really good teachers and good kids into absolute chaotic. You know, I can't express it enough. The whole school went down the tubes, and I was there at the time when that happened. Discipline just fell apart. These kids were ill-prepared to integrate anything. You know, there should have been some sort of an interim program for them.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Alan, the idea that the kids, maybe the parents too for that matter, the teachers weren't ready for integration when it started happening. What do you think?
Well, there's a lot of ways to look at that, some of which are a little more constructive than others. The reading achievement levels among low-income kids and disproportionately among African-American kids were low at that time. They're low to this day. And that makes it difficult to make progress in a school setting when kids aren't reading on the grade levels they ought to be at. The percentage of kids who are coming from homes that are really not allies of the school, and I'm trying to be careful in how I phrase that, disproportionately dysfunctional homes, is very high, and that shows up in school too in terms of behavior and just the ability to execute a plan to carry out the structure of the school is hard when you got a lot of kids who aren't very structured. So these are legitimate issues. Did white people leave the city at that time because of racism, because of legitimate concerns about the academic content of the schools their kids would have been going to, because of class discrimination? Frankly, and I could get in trouble for saying this. I think it was all of the above. There were reasons not to go to some schools because of the academic atmosphere, and what happened at the school Mike was talking about, I bet is basically an accurate description if you looked at it as objectively as you could.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We'll go next to Cheryl in Conover. Cheryl, hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm born and raised on the east side of Milwaukee, and all I got to say to you is this. The only way you integrate a school system is if you integrate a town, and Milwaukee is not integrated. Never has been, never will be, and still isn't today. So unless Milwaukee is going to change, you cannot change a school system. You cannot take these kids and expect them to be integrated when their parents never were.
Cheryl, thanks for the call. And people point toward a serious segregation in Milwaukee and the Milwaukee area. Alan, is that really a fatal obstacle if you want to integrate the schools?
Well, I don't know if it's fatal, but it's certainly still a highly segregated community as a whole. But on the other hand, overall, Milwaukee has a very diverse population, a very rich array of cultural influences and so on, and much more so than, dare I say, the state of Wisconsin, that, you know, if you go outside the city, especially if you get beyond, say, the closer in suburbs of Milwaukee, which are becoming more integrated both residentially and in terms of their schools, and then certain places like, you know, Madison, Beloit, Racine, Green Bay, Wisconsin is a very segregated state. You've got lots and lots of schools and school districts out there that are nearly 100% white to this day. And, you know, you can't just point to Milwaukee and say it's all your fault.
Talking to Alan Borsuk about desegregation in Milwaukee schools, 40th anniversary as the school year starts of court-ordered desegregation there. We'll go next to Al in Wauwatosa. Al, hi.
Well, hi, Alan. I read your column often in the paper, and my question is,
thanks,
in hindsight, again, it's always easy to look back, but what if all the money that had been used to pay for busing and schools and gasoline, not to mention all those students' time on buses, what if that money had been used to raise the level of the neighborhood schools themselves?
Al, thanks for the call. And Alan, you write about neighborhood schools in a follow-up piece to the one that triggered this discussion. What do you think?
Well, that's a really, really good question because it's an alternate universe that nobody knows. It's a painful question to answer. The fact that so many kids are so far behind in reading, and I think that really is a point to focus on, and they're ill-prepared for school when they get to four-year-old kindergarten, five-year-old kindergarten, just means they're at a disadvantage that is so hard to overcome. And it is really a fair question, what can schools do about it? So what if all the effort that went into integration had gone into raising reading levels, to helping kids get a fair start in the birth to four-year-old periods, or other changes like that? I don't know. It's certainly something you can dream about.
Al, thanks for the call. And Alan, in that follow-up piece I mentioned on the idea of neighborhood schools, there's sort of conflicting ideas in a way.
If we
move students around to mix up the schools, integrate schools a little better, that's maybe a positive. If we allow more choice, and there has been a lot of choice, letting parents pick their kids' schools, well, there's upsides to that. But then you're losing, in both of those cases, that community attachment to that school down the street or a few blocks away, where your neighbor kids, your neighbor parents are both involved in the same school.
I always reserve the right to contradict myself, even within the same column.
Well, I mean, the issue kind of
you're right. In that column, I was throwing out things that were contradictory, that there's things about neighborhood schools that are so great. My own kids and grandkids have gone to what I would call the neighborhood schools. And they are, in some ways, so much a way of separating us. The percentage of school kids in Milwaukee who are going to their neighborhood school is very low. With an MPS, it's under 20% that are going to what you would call their neighborhood school, because there's choice all over the place. There's private school choice. There's charter schools. Within MPS, there's a huge amount of choice. So the neighborhood school is a really an oddity in Milwaukee. And they have great strengths. So there are some efforts to try to build that up. There's so little being done that actually integrates anything that I'd kind of say, well, neighborhood schools, we don't have much choice but to try to build them up because that's what we have, or at least schools that have communities of their own, even if kids are choosing to go there. But these are the schools we have. We need to work with them.
Alan, with the achievement gap issues you've referred to here, with school quality issues in Milwaukee that people are trying to fix, is integration, is desegregation just off the radar, even though it was such a hot, huge issue of just 40 years ago?
Well, there are places where there is more in certain suburbs, Brown Deer, Wauwatosa, West Allis, some of the North Shore suburbs, Shorewood, Whitefish Bay, a little bit on the South Shore. You're seeing much more diverse populations in those suburban schools because there's been some migration of Black and Hispanic families, Asian families into those communities, and also because of open enrollment. But nonetheless, integration per se is not happening. And as I said, open enrollment actually increases the segregation of Milwaukee, that the 60% of the kids who open enroll out of the city of Milwaukee into suburban schools are white, which means that leaves a smaller number of white kids in the city in reality. So there ain't much of an integration movement. And Chapter 220, which was the voluntary suburban city integration program that goes back to the 1970s, is definitely in its fade away now. The legislature's cut off all new enrollment. The only kids who are in Chapter 220 now are kids who were already in those schools. So another few years, that'll be gone.
We'll leave it there for now. Alan, thanks, as always, for talking to us.
Glad to be here. I hope this is helpful.
That's Alan Borsuk, Senior Fellow in Law and Public Policy at Marquette University Law School. He writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on education. Join us to talk about the 40th anniversary this school year of the court-ordered desegregation of Milwaukee public schools and what's happened in the 40 years since that. You can find a link to his column and continue the conversation on the Central Time Facebook page. Just search for Central Time on WPR on Facebook.